Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that freshest squid on the block, Kyle Krause.
Stay fresh.
Woomy!
Yes, something like that.
Today's episode is going to be focusing on that new Nintendo IP powerhouse Splatoon, but before we get into that, what have you been up to lately, Kyle?
Well, as of about 20 minutes before this recording, I have been playing around a tiny bit with the freshly released Link's Awakening DLC for Hyrule Warriors Legends.
And
of course, being only 20 minutes into it, I've only had the chance to do one thing, and that's to play with a new weapon for Linkle. Have you seen?
Really? You didn't go straight for Marin's Bell?
Nope.
Which sounds really dirty out of context, but trust me, it's completely innocent.
Yes, it is, yes. But nope. I have not played with Marin yet. I, of course, immediately went to Linkle, because that's how I roll. And that's how she rolls, in her fancy new Pegasus boots.
Those things are so much fun.
They are ludicrously over the top, just like everything else in Hyrule Warriors, and I love it.
Yeah, but there's degrees of satisfaction in each of the characters, and Linkle in the boots is especially satisfying to play.
Yeah.
There's just something visceral about running up and just kicking something in the face repeatedly.
Yeah, it's very Chun-Li-esque. It's sort of that same satisfaction you get with Chun-Li, which most people hate because you can easily just cheat with her, but it's just a lot of fun.
That her basic combo almost feels grounded compared to a lot of the other attacks in the game. It just looks like very fancy footwork.
Yeah. It's on the level of Hyrule Warriors, I suppose. It's maybe slightly more realistic.
In a comparative sense, yes.
Yes, still insanely over the top ridiculous, but slightly more believable, I suppose. But it's still a lot of fun. How is Marin? I haven't played.
She's surprisingly fast and light on her feet without feeling floaty. And the bell has its own special meter that you charge up so that the strong attacks do more damage the more you've charged up the bell.
Ah.
And the windfish puts in at least two cameo appearances in some of her combos, so she's delightful.
Awesome. Is there any new story stuff with that? I don't know.
I don't know if that comes with story stuff. I do know that there's some stuff for the Wind Waker material, but that's exclusive to the 3DS version.
Right. There's a couple of new adventure maps, but I think that might be just about it. So what have you
I've kind of resigned myself to the notion that if there is a Hyrule Warriors Complete Edition on the NX, I'll probably have to give in.
Yeah.
Because I want all the bells and whistles.
Especially Marin's bell.
Which, again, sounds really dirty out of context, but it's completely innocent, I promise you.
What have you been up to this week, Ian? Or this last 2 weeks, I suppose?
Well, I'm doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work on the Sonic books. Stuff that I can't talk about, but it's planning for the future. I'm excited about a lot of stuff we got coming up. A hush-hush project that I'm on is getting ready to kick into high gear. Can't wait to tell you about that. And been playing Hyrule Warriors just like you. Very, very, very slowly picking away at the adventure map. I'm still missing two weapons for the original cast, and I've dabbled here and there. It's like there's so much grinding I need to do.
Yeah, there is so much stuff in the game,
but I've kind of hit a wall with a number of levels. I can't get far enough in one regard, so that kind of stops me from getting further in another regard, and it's just like,
right, yeah,
Why is this getting so much fun?
It's very grindy. There is a lot of content there. So
I really wish I could get the infinite rupee glitch to work, but I cannot pull that sucker off. It would make things a whole lot easier.
Did they patch it out?
It was active as of version 1.7, but okay. I don't know if anyone said anything as of 1.10.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard about it, but I haven't heard anything as far as continuing developments on it, if it's been patched out or not. I've never used it, but I don't even know if it works in the 3DS version. That might be something I'll need to look up.
I mean, others have said it's very easy to pull off, but I haven't been able to get it to go, so meh.
Meh. Yeah. Oh,
but speaking...
Go ahead.
You want to do the transition?
Nope, go ahead.
All right.
Sorry, I'm stepping all over you.
No. I'm actually wearing my backup pair of headphones, so it's kind of muffled on my end.
Okay.
And the summer allergies are kicking in, so I'm resisting the urge to go every other word. So,
it's all good.
This is going to be an interesting show.
It's all good. We'll try to keep it brief, maybe.
But going back to the other Wii U powerhouse title, Splatoon is coming up on what is said to be the last ever Splatfest.
Dun, dun, dun. Final Splatfest. Supposedly.
Unless Fox only. Probably, Zero Destination.
Yeah, right. They'll probably be back for Splatoon 2.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Splatoon has been such a standout success for them.
Yeah.
To the point where they've had two live concerts. Two live concerts. They've got, let's see, 6, 8 amiibos to it.
Yeah. I think they've even got a third concert coming up, too, here pretty soon.
There you go.
It's going to be in France.
And it is easily the most successful new franchise in years. Yeah. I find it hard to believe that this would be the last Splatfest. Maybe they'll go on like a break for a while to focus on server maintenance or set up some new deals like the Transformers thing.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine this is truly the last Splatfest.
I don't know. It might be. A lot of people kind of misinterpreted the news as like they're shutting down Splatoon. Splatoon is over. It's like, no. Hold on a second. No, they're just ending the monthly event that they were doing for the last year, which there's a bit of overhead involved in setting up these things. It's not like you just flip a switch and all of a sudden, oh, Splatfest, oh, there's a lot of preparation and things that probably go on behind the scenes. And it's either gotten to a point where it's either not worth it for them to continue that, or the team that was doing that is being moved on to other things. I know that the Splatoon team is also the Animal Crossing team, if I'm not mistaken. So they might be working on maybe a new Animal Crossing for the NX or the next Splatoon or something like that. So it can only... Honestly, I think it's sad to see it ending, but I think it is only a good thing that can lead on to bigger and better things from here for Splatoon especially.
Sure. And speaking of the overhead... It's not like it's a matter of, oh, we'll just, you know, flip the switch on the server. Because the one time they tried that universal server Splatfest, that did not work at all.
Right, yeah.
So you basically have the North American, the European, and the Japanese servers running at different time. And that's a lot of servers to maintain.
Right.
So, yeah. And with the Callie and Marie amiibos coming out, you'll be able to access, I'm assuming, the nighttime variants of the stages.
Right, yes, you can. You'll be able to change it into the, at least the plaza, you can change the plaza into the Splatfest plaza.
See, I really hope it works for the stages as well, even if it's only on your end, because I really like the nighttime aesthetic for a number of those stages.
Yeah, it would be nice, but I don't know.
It raises the question of, if you have the amiibo, mm-hmm. and you change it over to nighttime on your end, do other players get nighttime, or does it only load the nighttime assets on your console?
Yeah, I don't know. It might be able to do that. I don't know how they would, if they would synchronize that. I don't even know for sure if they synchronize color. I think they do, like ink color between players.
Right.
I think they do, but I'm not sure. I know that Splatfest always has one the same colors for each side, but I'm not sure.
And on top of that, the maps change depending on what objective you're after, whether it's tower control or splat zones or whatnot.
Yeah.
So the Splatfest maps are specifically designed for one kind of competition. Are there nighttime stage variants for every version of the map, or is it just the one? And there's a lot of questions to be answered, which is why we need amiibos right now to test and play.
I actually, as of the day we're recording, they were released today, which dates this episode a little bit, but they were released today and I picked them up earlier, so I'm going to have to play around with them a little bit later. But I do know that they unlock Splatfest and, or not Splatfest, they do unlock like a Splatfest version of the plaza, but they also unlock Soundtest and exclusive solo songs for each of the two Squid Sisters.
Now, do they perform in the plaza, or do they perform in the little amiibo corner?
That's a good question. I'll report back once I've had the chance to play with them. But of course, the final Splatfest is a drag-out, low-down slugfest between the two main characters of the game. We'll just call them that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yes. The spokes squids, I suppose. Callie and Marie. Now, Ian.
Which team are you on, Kyle?
I was going to ask you that.
The future of the show may hinge on this question.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Is this truly the end of the Bumblecast? I'm Team Marie, by the way.
Okay, I'm Team Marie. We're good.
Okay,
we can continue.
Excellent.
Nothing against Callie.
She's fun. Callie. She's great, but Marie.
But I've got to side with the dry wit every time.
Uh-huh. Yep. That's what it's all about. That's true.
Although Callie has gotten some sick burns in.
Callie,
as we approach.
Yes. Callie's doing good. Callie's good stuff. But I don't know, man. It's weird because if you kind of look at him, you think Marie's maybe kind of the more, I suppose, reclusive, quiet type. But man, she's just been brutal, especially with this Splatfest.
The stealthy hunter lies in wait.
Yes.
The very loud Marie, Callie is just squawk, squawk, squawk off to the side.
Yes. I also like Marie's design better. She's a lot cuter. Or a little cuter. I don't know. They're both pretty cute.
Now, I'm hoping that this time around, it won't be so one-sided as the last Splatfest, the early birds versus the night owls, because that was just almost completely one-sided. Just straight up night owls dominating.
I don't know. That was pretty rough. But no, I think the Cali fans will come out in force. That's most likely what will happen. We'll see. I mean, I'm not expecting, I don't know who to expect to win, but I think Marie seems to be the dominant favorite and the favorite of the Splatoon community, but I think Cali fans will come out.
And it's a small detail, but I really like the fact that they're actually cousins, and the whole Squid Sisters thing is just part of the brand.
Yeah.
It lends itself some authenticity to the whole J-pop diva thing that they've got going on.
Yeah, that's true. I actually forgot that detail. Is that mentioned in the game at all, or am I?
Yes,
it is. Okay.
In one of the secret scrolls that you get in the main play, there's a news clipping talking about two cousins from out in the boonies who are up and coming stars. And I'm fairly certain there's a bit of flavor text between the two of them at one point where they say, you know, technically we're cousins, but, you know, nobody wants to hear about the squid cousins, so it's Squid Sisters it is.
Yeah. They're not called sisters in every region either, so that's probably...
Oh, really?
...where that comes from. So, yeah. Because in France, at least, I know they're Les Calamazones, which is like a triple-level pun, I think. It's like three levels deep.
I wish I knew French. I'd be able to dissect it.
I think it is a pun on calamari and the French word for Amazon, Amazon, and maybe not. This is kind of my own interpretation, but also calzone. And apparently calamari calzones are actually a thing. So it's like a three-level deep pun there.
Calamari calzone. I don't know if I can.
I don't have much experience with calamari to be able to have an opinion on that.
It's kind of chewy, mm-hmm. I guess. It looks like onion rings, but it fights back. And having that in a calzone, I'm not sure I like that.
Oh, well.
But if this is truly kind of the, let's not say end, but a benchmark for Splatoon material, what would you put in a Splatoon 2? Because the sequel is usually there to improve upon the formula.
Mm-hmm.
But Splatoon pretty much does it right the first time around.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I'd say maybe a more robust single-player mode? I mean, it's not really necessary, but you could spend some time, a little bit of time, expanding on the lore and expanding on the setting and everything like that, or the story.
I would like to see if they did do anything single player, not necessarily a campaign, but single player options.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see a more intelligent AI system.
Yeah, like a practice mode or something like that.
Right, because as it stands, the Octolings are not the brightest enemies you can face, so they're not really good to practice on.
Right.
And if you go into your regular online mode, you're going to be thrown up against veterans and newbies at the same time, so you don't really have a good way of practicing your killing. And if you go into ranked, you can't really practice because any failure is going to die you down.
Yeah.
So having somewhere where you could, you know, test out techniques or something would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Also hoping for more robust stage and weapon selection. Not anything too complex, but something I would like is that, you know, if you know which stage you're going into, you have option maybe 1, 2, or 3 loadout presets.
Yeah,
so if you know you want this loadout for this stage, it's not, I'm going to select this loadout and hope I get the stage. It's, okay, I know what I'm doing, boop, boop, done.
Yeah, I'd say that one of the things, and this is always a problem with Nintendo games, for some reason, I don't know why, the menus are a little bit clunky and could stand to be refined a bit, especially since they have added so many weapons. The weapon menu is just a very, it's pretty messy. It's hard to get through. So, when you want to switch weapons, it's definitely a pain. So that'd be something I'd like to see. Playable Octolings would be pretty cool.
My only concern there would be the hitboxes. This goes back to when I was playing Halo 2 in college,
mm-hmm.
and I loved the design of the elites. I relished the opportunity to play as one of the Sankalai, but because their heads are dead center on their chests,
mm-hmm.
and their chests are very broad, it made their hitboxes automatically worse than the Spartans. Because anyone aiming at your torso is more likely going to hit you in the head. Whereas the Spartans, as being normal people, headshots are much more difficult to do. So, if you were very serious about actually playing as an elite was a handicap because it automatically sets you up for taking more damage. So, with the Octolings, their heads are so much larger and more complicated versus the Inklings. I worry that Octolings would be harder to play as, or would take a fair degree of redesign to make them balanced.
Hmm. I never really even thought about that, but you make a good point. It would probably be a little more difficult for snipers, maybe. I don't know exactly. I don't normally play as a sniper, but...
Of course, then again, I'm not entirely sure how the hitboxes for them work.
Yeah.
I mean, just the programming involved just to do the ink coverage makes my mind boggle. Just how do they do that and keep the game running at something above 2 frames per second? It's because it's very fluid and very dynamic, and it's constantly changing. Just normal coverage would be crazy, but having it constantly changing with 2 different ink colors, with various forms of spread, and, you know, 8 people going on at all times, I don't understand how it works, Kyle. Yeah. Not that I'm a programmer to begin with, but I've seen enough development videos to know that fluids in general are a pain.
Yeah, that is.
And this entire game is based about fluids on surfaces, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they did it and did it so well, but there's probably a reason why they didn't implement Inklings properly into Super Smash Bros. 4. Coding that for every stage, it would not work. And it would just completely change the way every stage plays. I think that sort of thing would probably be incredibly broken if the ink in functioned the same way in Smash Brothers that it does in Splatoon. Now, if it weren't persistent, if it eventually like disappeared, it might be something you can deal with, but I don't know.
Hopefully they'll figure it out for Smash 5, because I want Inklings in that.
Yeah, that would be nice.
And if the team is moving on for whatever the next Animal Crossing will be, with their experience with Splatoon, obviously Animal Crossing needs to bring in paintball gun fighting. So you and the villagers run around, splatting everything in sight.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be nice.
If we get into the topic of what they should do in Animal Crossing, we'd be here all night.
Right. Is there anything else you could think of that they could maybe do with Splatoon? I think it's just mostly refinements at this point. It's not really anything huge they could really add to it.
Not really, because I think the weapons that they have right now cover the most sensible play styles.
Yeah. It's pretty well balanced, all things considered.
Because if you try to go into your more traditional first-person shooter weaponry, number one, it wouldn't necessarily work with the ink coverage dynamic.
Yeah.
And it isn't really necessary, because to a degree, the bucket is kind of like a rocket launcher or grenade launcher in that it's a large amount of projectile over a short distance. You've got a chain gun. You've got a couple of melee options, a heavy melee and a fast melee. You've got rapid fire. You've got the various forms of grenades. I don't know. I think at this point it would more be adding things on while making sure it stays balanced. There isn't a ton that you could really add on to improve the game, except more stable servers.
Right. I'm also thinking, I don't know how they would balance this, but maybe make it a little easier to build the exact loadout that you want as far as your item bonuses. Like what each item does. I don't know if they could balance that out, because right now it's just mostly just random and you keep having to do rerolls until you get what you want, which is fine to an extent, but I think I'd prefer being able to tweak it more to my liking right off the bat rather than having to hope and hope on a random chance that I get what I'm looking for.
Or maybe balance it out so that the random rolls are the least expensive option.
Yeah.
But if they're random, whereas if you want to buy specific patches, it's significantly more.
Right.
That way you can still build up the money to get what you want, or you can take a gamble and luck out.
Yeah, because right now it is it's completely random, and it's tied to Splatfest, I think. I think it's only tied to Splatfest, isn't it?
Well, depending on which company creates which piece of clothing depends on what things it will roll.
Right.
So, I like that aspect. I hope they keep that, but
I just meant in terms of being able to re-roll items, item bonuses. That's tied to Splatfest, because Splatfest is the only way you can get the shells, right?
Well, you can also pay with regular Squid Bucks.
Oh, that's right. Okay. My bad. I forgot about that.
It costs a whole lot.
Yeah. And with this being the final Splatfest, that's kind of going away. So if anybody's just hopping into the game just now, you're going to have to grind a bit.
See, that's another fair point. That's another reason I wouldn't think that this truly is the last Splatfest, because where else are you going to get the shells? That relies entirely on the in-game currency, which, granted, it isn't too difficult to amass, but it's not nearly as special as the sea snails.
Yeah.
So maybe it will be, you know, whoever wins says, all right, as victor of Splatfest, I declare Splatfest goes on forever, or something like that.
Or maybe that they lower the price of the shells through a patch. That could work.
Possibly. Or make it a
sea snails
lesser event option. You know?
Right.
Log in on this day, get some sea snails. Hey, you've been here for a while. Here's some sea snails. Hey, we just wanted to let you know we like you playing. Here's some sea snails.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. They could do something like that.
So there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of things we don't know. There's amiibos that we can't play with yet. Or at least I can't. For now, we're just going to have to wait and see. So let's move on. First up, we have a Patreon-supported ad here by our good friend Daniel H. He's pointing us back in the direction of Art by Angel at www.etsy.com/people/artbyangel. She's trying to raise money for her wedding, which is in a few months from this show. And any shopping on her site's going to help her out. And having had a wedding myself, costs for that add up pretty quick. So,
oh yeah,
see what she has to offer. Toss a couple bucks her way. Get something out of it. Everybody wins.
Awesome.
Yep, so first we're going to move off to our priority Q&A for those who support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/bumblecast. Just so you know, going forward, when you're asking your questions, either on Twitter with hashtag bumblecast, through the email bumblecast@yahoo.com, or in the comment section on the Patreon, do try to be succinct. Not that we begrudge any questions. Obviously, you're giving us your support. We're going to answer the questions. But a paragraph is a hard thing to go through and parse down and kind of pads out the show. So if you can sum it up in a sentence, that makes it a little easier on us, especially for Kyle as he's putting the show notes together.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to get to the meat of your question first and faster rather than trying to dissect it and say, okay, what was the point that they were trying to reach? Let us help you.
Right. We definitely appreciate your questions, but the brevity... Brevity is important.
How many times now have they asked a question like, what did they mean by this? So,
right.
They're going to start handing us single sentence questions. Oh, what do they mean by that? They start sending us the paragraphs. Don't send us so much. Send back single sentences. Eh.
Yeah. I mean, if you do feel the need to explain your question, that's perfectly fine. But if you can, maybe try and break out sort of the meat of what you're asking on its own somehow, like call it out and say, this is what I want you to say on air, or something like that, anything like that. Or even like if you're emailing it, you can make it boldface, like your question, like what you want me to read. Because we do get all your questions, we read them all, but on the air, it's definitely going to be a lot easier for us to just say, this part is what you want us to read, and everything else, your explanation is fine, it's great. And we'll take it into account when we're answering the question, but we don't need to say it all on the air. So,
right. So all that said, Kyle,
right.
What's our first priority question?
Speaking of lack of brevity. All right. First one from the priority Q&A comes from our good friend, Daniel L. This one is for you, Ian, of course. You mentioned that you wrote Mega Drive with Hess in mind. Tyson Hess, awesome artist. Does the artist often help you figure out what you're going to do with the comic?
With Mega Drive in particular, which is out now, if you haven't read it yet, it's been just crazy successful. Oh my goodness, Kyle, you would not believe how successful this book has been.
I am glad.
As of this recording, it's actually on the cusp of selling out.
No wonder I can't find it.
Period.
Dang it.
It's
crap. Ah!
With Mega Drive, I knew Tyson was going to be drawing it ahead of time, so I was able to structure the script in a way that I knew would play to his strengths. I know that he has an excellent sense of composition. His artwork is phenomenal in capturing a sense of speed and just visceral physical action. And the man is the master of facial expressions. His comedic timing is phenomenal.
Yeah,
so
it's beautiful stuff.
That I all had in mind when constructing Mega Drive. If somebody else was drawing it, and I knew who it was ahead of time, I would have likewise tried to structure the script towards their strengths. I know this person is good at big panel layouts, so I'll do big panel layouts. I know this person is very good at crowd scenes. Okay, make best use of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really get an opportunity to be directly working with them in terms of how they're going to lay it out. More often than not, I don't see any of the art until it's done. Sometimes I get to see pencil pages ahead of time, but the rule usually is they have such a tight deadline, they have to get it done, send it in, move on. And I can occasionally kind of wave from the stands going, oh, I have an opinion. But the team that I work with is so good, I don't really need to, be there. I don't need to try to be an editor. I can send the script in, and I know that they're going to do fantastic stuff. So, no, I don't work directly with them most of the time, but there are occasions where they will contact me and say, is this what you meant by this layout? Is it okay if I do it this way? What were you thinking? That kind of thing.
How often do you get that?
I've gotten it once or twice. I've learned over the years. I was actually having a conversation with Matt Herms on Twitter, talking about how we've grown in our professional ability since we started. And I joked about, this one scene very early on in my run saying, 30 characters in one splash page fight scene? Sure, why not? I've grown past that. Oh, wait, no. I had him color the every robot master ever 2-page spread out of Worlds Collide. No, I haven't learned a thing. Never mind.
To be fair, this is a big event. Worlds Collide's a big event, and that kind of thing kind of needed to happen.
And to be fair, he and Ben Bates made the finest piece of comic book
art ever.
It is
gorgeous.
It is glorious. So,
yes.
Yes, I probably broke their hands. I probably melted some hard drives with that script. But what was resultant from it was fantastic.
Yes. It's glorious.
I regret nothing.
It's glorious. All right, we got one here from Chaotic Canine, and that's with a K on both those words, which is always good. I'm wondering, how do you look at feedback for your work, Ian?
I snoop around online, various forms of fan interactions, be they message boards or on Twitter or through email. I'm not nearly as public about it anymore, ever since the Bumble King forum shut down, mm-hmm. in part because I don't want my presence to bias the conversation. If, a particular forum knew that I was there, they would either try to be gentle or more nice. I've even seen a little bit of brown nosing from time to time. Or the other end of the spectrum, where they are even harsher in their criticism than is necessary. So just by standing back and watching other people talk about it, I feel like I'm getting a more fair interpretation of what their feedback is. And I'm not going to specify where, because once I do, people are going to go, oh, Ian's lurking here. And that's going to, again, bias the conversation.
Right.
I also get big, big packages of fan mail every now and again, actually handwritten fan mail. And that is really interesting compared to the online feedback in terms of the range of ages, the ranges of genders, and even the regions. I'm still impressed by the fan mail we got from Malaysia and Saudi Arabia. And it's like,
wow,
how do you get these books? We only ship to the U.S. and Canada. Are you really, really that into the book that you're going to order it from the other side of the world? I'm so happy you are.
Yeah.
And if you're somehow listening to this show, I am flattered, and I hope you enjoyed the book. It's just, it's really impressive.
Are those the kinds of pieces that kind of stick out to you the most?
Some, yeah. The ones that really stick out to me, there's one in particular that I saved, this one. I open up the letter, and there's a little 3x5 card that's just this messy scroll of lines and various colors. I'm like, okay, this is the end for this one. Whatever they had has snapped. What does the letter say? And the letter says, this is from our daughter. She's 3 years old. This is her first piece of fan mail that she's sending in. We hope you like it. And it's like, that is the cutest thing ever.
That is pretty adorable.
And then you have the people who, are very, well-spoken, that they really appreciate the book. You have the people who have their own ideas. You have the people who have their own opinions, positive or negative, and it runs the gamut of it. And there are some really well-spoken children out there, Kyle. Like, I'm getting these letters from kids in, grade 1, grade 3, and their handwriting is far better than mine is. and they're very eloquent in their writing. And it's like, huh, well, you make me feel inadequate. Way to go, kiddo.
I guess the school system kind of still works.
Somewhere it does, apparently.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, and our last piece of priority Q&A comes from Fancy Fool. He wants to know, this one's a bit long, so bear with me here. Ian, why did you keep Cream the Rabbit on the sidelines and have her pretty much do nothing for the majority of the Shattered World Crisis, despite letting her officially become a freedom fighter at the beginning and subsequently needing to justify being a member of the protagonist? Also, just out of curiosity, why did you put a great deal of focus on Cream's relationship with Sally throughout Shattered World to the point of Cream almost exclusively interacting with Sally?
Well, I'm going to refer first to, what was it, episode 7 and episode 12? Because we've already kind of covered the ground on this a few times.
Yeah, episode 7 and 12 had previous questions about Cream that are kind of similar to this, so maybe kind of refer back to those a little bit.
But the whole point of the Shattered World saga has been to rebuild the world and the mythos. So the Freedom Fighters had drastic design changes and very large changes to their backstories, and that all needed to be explained. Cream did not. Cream is her Sega Sonic counterpart, more or less. She's not going to change. Who she is and what her dynamic is set by Sega, so there, why invest a great deal of time in saying, here's what you already know, when we could be spending that time expanding on what you don't know? I didn't really make a concentrated effort to have her spend more time with Sally than anyone else. But if anything, it was more for, I guess, Sally's sake to have flesh out who she is in the new continuity by using the established characters like Amy and Cream. Honestly, I think I spent more time with Amy and Sally interacting, but
yeah,
it basically, the whole thing is focusing on expanding the new world and the new cast, because the Sega Sonic cast is the foundation.
Right.
That's already set. We know who they are and what they're doing.
Right. And there's definitely fans of Cream.
She's grown on me. I was not a fan at first, but when, I think it was Sonic Battle, that pretty much introduced the idea of her being kind of the Tails to Amy.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I really think it synced up, because that was about the time Amy was really on her kind of crazy coquettish characterization before she got dialed down.
Yeah.
So having Cream, despite the age difference, being the polite voice of reason against Amy's not, that made for a fun dynamic.
Yeah. I would agree. Now, I think that works.
Sega Sonic Amy's been dialed back a fair bit since then.
Mm-hmm.
So their relationship now is going to be a little, I don't want to say tepid, because that sounds too negative, but it isn't quite as bombastic, I suppose. But the comic version of Amy is a little more proactive than the game version, I guess. So their dynamic's going to be a little more zippy, I suppose.
Yeah. All right. That's going to wrap up the priority Q&A. Thank you to all our glorious patrons over at patreon.com.
Yes, thank you so much for your patronage each episode.
Yes. All of you over at patreon.com/bumblecast. All right, now onto the standard Q&A. We got one from DaBigRG. He wants to know, who's your guys' most favorite Sonic character, Mega Man character, and comic original characters? Are you allowed to get into this, Ian? I'm not sure. Are you gonna start a flame war if you call out favorites?
I think I already had that last answer, but isn't this technically three questions?
Yeah,
Trojan questions.
It actually was three individual questions, and I combined them.
Oh, sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, I combined them all.
Well, I've been talking long enough. You go first.
All right. Well, I would say for Sonic, specifically Sonic, it would have to be Sonic. I spent a long time debating, and like, it's kind of cliche, I suppose, to go for Sonic as my favorite character. But, you know, he's Sonic.
He's only the face of the franchise.
Right, right, exactly. He's Sonic. He's the one who started this all. He's the one who got me into it. I mean, come on. I do have a couple of honorable mentions, though. Blaze is definitely one I've just really just fallen in love with, especially through the comics. I would like to see her start to get more play in the comics, but I don't know if that's coming or not, but I hope so. And and even more recent than Blaze, Styx. I just adore Styx. She's just so ridiculous and so much fun. And of course, I got to stick up for my boy Mighty, the guy Sega's completely forgotten about.
I wouldn't say completely.
Almost completely.
For two reasons. Number one, I think it was on the anniversary of Knuckles Chaotix, they put out a small piece of art that had headshots of all the Chaotix.
Mm-hmm.
Sans Heavy and Bomb, but who cares? And interestingly, Mighty was not only in the mix, but I thought initially that it was just a tweaked Sonic face. And apparently it was confirmed it was original art done for that piece.
Huh.
Number two, there was a big survey that went out by Sega, I believe last month, asking all sorts of questions like, what kind of crossovers would you like to do with other franchises? What kind of other styles of gameplay would you like to see Sonic undertake? And of the characters listed, it was like, what characters do you know of and what characters would you like to see? Mighty was on the list. Of all the forgotten characters, Mighty was on the list.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know if that actually means anything, or if it was just somebody having fun seeing, okay, how many old people remember this guy? Maybe it was just a small nod to the hardcore fans. I honestly don't know. But hope springs eternal.
Yes. I always liked Mighty. He was my favorite of the Chaotix, which is why I was really sad when he got removed for Sonic Heroes. I mean, sure, that was a limitation of the game, but still.
Right.
For Mega Man, I gotta give the nod to X, Mega Man X. He'll always be a favorite of mine. I don't know why. It's just, first of all, he's just got a really cool design. And, you know, his character kind of goes up and down throughout the games, at least. But in the comics, I'd say he was pretty consistent and a lot more what I envision of the character, rather than sort of the weirdly pacifist guy we got for Mega Man X7, which I'm glad kind of has gotten ignored.
Well, the thing with X is we didn't really get very far with him,
right,
in the comic. And I wish we had more time with the Mega Man X series, because what I wanted to do was rationalize X's almost self-destructive pacifism by X7 to see, you know, how he goes from being so much on that I don't want to fight aspect, being put through all these scenarios where he has to slaughter so much.
Right.
And I think he just kind of reached a breaking point, but
it
could have been.
I do like that he does have that sort of depth of character where he's put in situations where he doesn't necessarily want to be there. He's not all gung-ho about fighting, but he does what's necessary. And I think that's one thing I really admire about his character. Following up on that, Proto Man and Bass, I gotta give a nod to. The dark anti-hero types. I'm into them. Splash Woman is also cool. And for the Sonic comics, I think my love of Nicole has been well established by this point.
It is quite well documented, yes.
Yes. Bunny probably less so, but I really like Bunny. And for newer characters, Conquering Storm and Relic. So, you know, a whole roundup of female characters.
Okay.
And then for the Mega Man comics, Quake Woman and Dr. Lalinde. That's pretty much it.
For me, I'm going to keep myself very succinct on the list. Game characters, Knuckles. He was my first fan favorite. He's always going to be my boy.
Yeah, Knuckles is definitely up there for me. I'd probably tack him on my honorable mentions too, but I wanted to keep it small.
Mega Man, I'm going to keep it to classic and say Dr. Wily.
Dr. Wily is a lot of fun, yeah.
Because while Proto Man's angst is loads of fun to get into, Dr. Wily is infinitely entertaining. And if Knuckles were not in the mix, Dr. Eggman would have the top spot. So, you know, the mad scientist who steals the show every time is right up there. With original characters, that's a lot harder to pick. On the Sonic end, I guess I'll have to go with Eclipse purely because he shouldn't work when you add it all together. and he has been embraced by the fandom. We put a lot of effort into making this concept feel cohesive in the Sonic universe and work as an individual character, and I think it worked.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
It feels like people have accepted him and said, this is a really dumb idea, but it works. So, okay, we're running with it.
Yeah, I'm on board with Eclipse. He's cool.
And for Mega Man, as much as I enjoy what we've done with Quake Woman, I'm going to have to go with the duo of Gil Stern and Rosalind Krantz.
They're my second pick. They're
just because
great.
They give us a point of view in the Mega Man world that you don't get otherwise. And they're delightful in the way that they play off each other and the way they play off Mega Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, I definitely agree. All right, we got one here from Next Walt Disney. Coming back. What project would you want to see as an animated series? Sylvana or Raiders of the Abyss?
Given that Raiders kind of died on the vine, pure practicality, I would say Sylvana. In terms of visuals, if you could get something close to Don Beth's style and do it properly in an animated fashion, the spectacle of some of the settings and some of the stuff planned, that would be really cool to see animated. So Sylvana, easily.
Awesome. And finally, from Team Random 21, you're having a bad day. What do you do?
You have a bad day. You're going online. Everything there doesn't seem too fine. And so you log off. You go play a game. You do anything just to keep you sane.
Yep.
If I remembered how the rest of the song would go, I could probably do a further parody. But usually I read or I dive into a game or I'll go out onto the porch here at our place at night and just zone out to the sound of traffic and just kind of not think. And probably eat a very large cheeseburger because that's just comfort food.
You took what I do. Cheeseburger. cheeseburger loving person. I love cheeseburgers too. They're delicious.
Not good for you, but by golly, they're good.
I know. Yes.
What about you, Kyle? What do you do to stave off the existential crisis, the ever-widening maw of despair that is reality?
Mostly the same as you, except also sleep.
Sleep is a good one, too. Sleep, except I always get angry when I wake up and say, I could have done something productive with this time. So,
yeah.
Not that
I mean,
playing games are necessarily productive, but at least it feels like you accomplished something.
Yeah, true. I don't know. I'm kind of, I guess, 50-50 on sleep, but that's generally what I end up doing. Just sometimes I just want to just turn everything off, and sleep is the way for me to do that.
And hey, burgers are supporting the economy. It continues the cycle of society as we know it. So it's a good sacrifice on our end to continue the human experience.
Yes, maybe.
That's my story. I'm sticking to
I'm
it.
I'm not so sure. I don't know. All right. That's going to do it for our Q&A this week. And I think that will do it for the show.
I think so, too. You got anything coming up, Kyle, that you want to plug?
Coming up, not anything I'm willing to divulge necessarily right now, but pretty soon I'm going to have an exciting announcement, so
stay tuned. Intrigue.
Yes, yes. Stay tuned. I got something that's been long dead, long on hiatus, that is probably going to be returning sooner rather than later, so... Keep
what
an
is
ear.
Dead
keep,
can never die.
Keep an eye.
Rise again, stronger.
Yes. Keep an eye out and an ear for that. So, KNGI.org is where you want to find the information for that. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. And I am streaming live video game music radio every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over at 8bitx.com. And good.
I don't have anything that I can plug just yet. Just look out for the resurgence of the trade paperbacks of the Sonic stuff as it's coming up. You can always follow what I've got going on at bumbleking.com. The Bumble calendar has the number of release dates already listed. Also has my next con appearance, which will be Fan Expo in September. You can also keep up with me at Ian Flynn BKC on Twitter. And before we wrap up the show, we're going to give our usual shout out to all the patrons who made this show possible. Thank you again, everyone, for being so awesome. I'm going to give a nod to S. Yavarovich 9X, Daniel H., Fancy Fool, Daniel L., Samuel P., Justin G., Connell T., James K., Patty M., and Alex P. Thank you all so much for sticking with us for so long. And some of you guys have been with us for, like, months, probably close to a year now. So that's just staggering.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for your support, guys. You are the coolest. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I tip my metaphorical hat to you.
Yes. You need to get a real hat, sir.
Well, I do, but it's hot up here.
I'm just saying. Oh, come on. You can't tell me it's hot up there. Don't lie to me.
It's like 90 freaking degrees, dude. I mean, granted, where you are, you can fry an egg on the street.
90. Come on. Come on. I would love 90 degrees right about now. I'm a little sick of 115.
Look, just because we don't spontaneously combust on the street doesn't make it any less hot. It's just degrees of uncomfortable hot.
Right. Well, you know what they say? At least it's a dry heat.
That's going to wrap it up for episode 21 of the Bumblecast. We'll see you in 2 weeks for episode 22.
See you later, everybody.
Joining me, as always, is... Damn it, I had something for this. Hold on. I had it and I lost
it. Oh, no.
There we go.
Your squid right. To your kid?
Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.